Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring. Boring, boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball is baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
All right, baseball isn't boring, and I know that every single time that I listen to this guy, Boo Sciambi, I'm not just saying this, Boo. Like, I've said this, I think I've said it to you, but I always thought that the preeminent or the best broadcast that I had heard on the radio for the last few years before you went to the Cubs, when you were doing like do you still ESPN Sunday night games? Okay.
About half of them.
Okay. So you and Chris Singleton. I said, as a connoisseur of the art of radio broadcasting, where I say I fill my head with information, I blurt it out. But I do feel it. I do. I've always found it fascinating how this has evolved. And I just felt like when I listened to you guys hit the sweet spot. You guys do it right. So we'll get to that in a second. But I just want, first of all, how are you?
Thank you. I'm good. How you doing?
Good, good. I know you're coming off. So as I just told you, there's two things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about two things I'm very passionate about right now. That is broadcasting and the Cubs. We had Pedro Grifol on the podcast, and he had me all fired up for the White Sox now. And we had David Ross on, but honestly, Boogie, you know, Rossi, you worked with him. You call his games and everything else. This was right before free agents was starting. So I'm like, okay, go get them. Go do your recruiting thing. First of all, I guess that's where I'll start. How do you think that Rossi is as a recruiter? Well, what does that look like?
I mean, I think his reputation precedes him. So I think as a player, he had probably accumulated a fair amount of street cred, and I don't think that's changed as a manager. He's charming. He's also direct and honest in a way that I think that most of the people around him appreciated. And so, I don't know in those spots how much of a factor recruiting actually is. You know, the way it ultimately, plays out is most of these guys just in the end end up taking whatever the, the highest dollar amount
it's
is.
True.
Right?
So yeah, it's true.
It's a funny thing where, to the point where it's weird if a guy's, a guy will, he wants to play in X place and he'll take $6 million total more from another place. And it's like, what in the vast scheme of things, what's the $6 million doing for you? I mean, when we're talking about $140 million, you know what I mean? Like, so look, if anybody is going to be good at it, David is going to be good at it would be my thought.
So you're so right. We hear about like tax breaks and everything else. We're like, okay, well, it's a million, but is it worth it? You know, in the grand scheme of things. But I think that, and I'm glad you said this, and this isn't sort of where I was planning on going with the whole recruiting talk, but I find it interesting. We had our good friend on, Joe Kelly, and right before free agency started, and we were talking about this, and he said, like, it's outdated. It's archaic. This isn't college. And, I think that since then we've had other people come on and agree with them, say exactly what you said. Usually it's about the money. Sure, it might be somewhat about where you're going to go. But I think that when it comes to David Ross, I think this is where it worked for him, because he's not worried about putting something up in the Jumbotron. He's not like doing the college basketball, college football thing. He's just David Ross.
Yeah, that's right. He's just being himself. There's no question. It comes naturally. But again, I agree with Joe. I mean, I would say, back at the same topic, I would say, in my opinion, I think that players get it wrong at times. Like, go where you want to go. Like, if you want to be happiest, like, go where you want to go. Go to the location, if it's that. Go to a place where you think gives you the best chance to win, because getting your butt kicked in a city that you don't like, and taking the money, tons of guys have found out it's not all it's cracked up to be.
No, I get it. We both probably have examples. I mean, for around here where I'm at in Boston, the one that jumps out is Carl Crawford. I mean, Carl Crawford was like, how does he? He's like, how do I turn down $40 million more? Well, okay, I get it, but you're going to be miserable. But there's plenty of examples. Yeah. But it seems like the event, and I wasn't there, but you were there. What was it called? It was called Cubs. Comic-Con.
It's CubsCon. Cubs Convention is what it is. So okay. There's an opening ceremony, and they sing the national anthem, and autographs and panels. It's wall to wall with former Cubs and Hall of Famers and all sorts of stuff. It's in one building at the Sheraton, and it is amazing. It's just, and the minor leagues are there as well. It is just wall to wall Cubs.
And that's the thing, to come back to sort of wanting to be there. The images that I see, and you know this better than any place, the Cubs playing at Wrigley Field, playing with the Cubs, even when you're not that good, to hear that song after end of the wins and to be in that environment and all of that stuff, it's so different. It should be such a draw. And now you're getting kind of good. Now you're getting players, and it must have been that vibe there. It sure looked like there was a lot of smiles on the faces and maybe a dramatically different sort of vibe than there was probably even than a year ago, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's the transition from the 16 championship team and then some disappointment that they weren't able to win it again. Those players moving on. And there was, there was difficult periods because, as fans are want to do. They didn't just want the Cubs to win again. They wanted them to win again with Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo. They wanted you two to make the Joshua Tree again. They wanted the band to stay together. And I get it, but it's just not realistic, And ultimately, it's a funny thing, man. I think that if you asked the average Cubs fan, they still would have preferred for Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo to be signed to massive extensions, even though it's been proven that management did the right thing as it relates to not doing it. I mean, I think Riz, from the value standpoint, would be the one, you know, you'd make the case for. But yeah, it's just, it's one of those weird things. And as far as the fan base, it's an incredible fan base. Mm. It's an absolutely incredible fan base. It's, you know, last year they played much better in the second half, but you know, they're playing in late August and September against the Pirates, and there's 35,000 people there. It's different. It's different.
What was the biggest takeaway you had from, before I get to my analysis from afar of this team and how it's constructed, what was your biggest takeaway when you walked out of that building, said, oh man, you know, that guy was impressive, or this was interesting? Was there anything that, because we see a lot of teams do this sort of thing, and usually there's something.
Which sort of thing?
Oh, this sort of like
the convention thing.
Yeah, like for the Red Sox, it's called Winter Weekend, you know. So,
right. Yeah.
I mean, not, I shouldn't say a lot of teams, but some teams do it. Sometimes, like something, yeah. The Marlins.
They do a fan fest. Yeah. No, the Marlins do a fan fest.
Right. But I just saw the Marlins one that no one showed up. So,
Shocker.
But yeah, but so what was the thing that you like, you walked out of the building, like, okay, this was interesting, or I got a good vibe from this, or whatever. Was there anything?
I think the one thing that I would say that I took away from it is something you alluded to, is to guys like Tyon, Swanson, Bellinger were really excited to be there. Like, there was a real vibe of, this is going to be cool playing for this team. I think that's really what I took away. And I would say the fans were jazzed up. I was taking it in for the first time. This will be my third year, but it was the first time I'd been at a Cubs convention. So I'd heard about it, but I hadn't experienced it. And it was intense. I couldn't really wrap my head around how many fans were there. And, you know, in this massive ballroom, all these panel shows, etc., and it was, you know, multiple floors. It was pretty incredible.
So when I look at this team, you know, obviously you have, like you said, you had to turn things over, which is always uncomfortable because you're gonna have to go through growing pains. But now you get to the point, there's that point where you're like, you have the base, you have enough experience from the young guys, now you can bring in some of these guys who maybe on 1 or 2 year contracts, but they're not only gonna, you hope for the best on the field, you know, they're going to have an impact off the field, in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Mancini, Bellinger, Hosmer. Oh my goodness! So when I look at this roster, that's what jumps out to me, Boo. Like, that's what jumps out to me is these guys, and Hosmer is the perfect example. Holy mackerel! You want to talk about people singing praises about a guy in a clubhouse? It's that guy, right? So I mean, that seems like that it's built that way, built pretty well that way, right?
So, I mean, you start with Haas. I mean, you just will not find a guy that teammates seem to unanimously say, that dude, I like him on my team, and he's good in our room. He just, whether the production's off the charts or not off, he has garnered a reputation as a guy to follow, period. I think Dansby Swanson, you know, I mean, think about what he did. It's not like the Braves weren't interested in him. He grew up in Atlanta. He played for the hometown team. He won a World Series there, and he made the choice. He wanted to be in Chicago. I mean, he's, you know, he told a cool story at the press conference about his grandfather being a Cubs fan and, you know, always having WGN on. But I would say that, you know, Dansby's a guy whose leadership qualities have grown as, you know, as he has grown as a player and as he's matured. And he pretty clearly wanted to be the face of this franchise. So I think in the overall, there's some excitement. I would view it as this. I think that they look at 24 and really even 25 as, you know, if we're having this conversation before 25, that they're going to be sitting there saying, we think we have a chance to go deep in a playoff. But they've retooled their farm system to the degree that they have all these lottery tickets, and maybe some of these players who look like they're going to be pretty good end up being dudes and they pop, but they have way more lottery tickets than most teams do. And so I think that what their intention is would be to start creating that clubhouse and that runway of that culture towards 23, 24, 25.
So when you look at, when you talk about them popping in 24 and 25, who are the guys, name a couple guys where you feel like, along with these guys on the periphery, like, let's assume that Swans is going to be solid. Let's assume, right. You know, even guys like, who knows, maybe Hosmer, and we get the best of Hosmer, you get the best on the field, Hosmer, Bellinger, you get the best of these guys, Stroman. Who are the guys that are going to have to pop and say,
those are
all-stars?
Right. So it's a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong, who was a former first round pick of the Mets that had gotten the Baez trade, who a lot of people think is probably the best defensive outfielder in the minors right now and would play close to a Gold Glove caliber center field in the majors right now.
And by the way, Boog, who I interviewed about the very interesting topic of his mother being the actress in Little Big League.
Yep.
Yeah,
she was the mom.
That's all I listen to. I mean, that's the one I'm interested in. Yeah. That's classic. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, I think they're excited about him as, you know, as eventually being their center fielder. And then you have guys like Brennan Davis, who was the, you know, the Futures Game MVP when he hit a couple of homers but dealt with back problems last year. You know, Christian Hernandez at shortstop. You know, and then pitching wise, they have guys, you know, guys like Daniel Palencia, guys like Caleb Killian, who we saw last year, but also DJ Hers, Jensen Wicks. Like, there's, and I think that what it ends up being, and then, you know, look, they made trades for Rizzo and for Bryan and got guys like Canario, Alcantara. Those guys are, you know, massive talents. There's a ton of them. It's just a matter of, like, who's actually going to hit. I mean, I think they feel good that Pete Crow Armstrong is going to be here, you know, at the latest in 24. I think they're excited about the talent level that they have.
Yeah, well, that's. I mean, it's also good that they have the chance of winning. I mean, any bridge year, quote-unquote bridge year, you want to have still a chance. I mean, this isn't like a division that's going to blow you away, I don't think.
No, absolutely not.
No. All right. Well, listen, you got me fired up for the Cubs. I don't know if it's at the level Pedro Grifol got for the White Sox, but I can't even ask you. Like, I was going to ask who has more wins, the Cubs or White Sox, but that's not fair. You're contractually bound to one team and not the other. So
yeah.
So.
I love Pedro, though. Good dude. I mean, I can remember watching him play when he was at Florida State back in the day.
Really?
He was teammates with Eduardo Perez. I think Doug Mankiewicz was on his team back then. But, you know, a guy he's been around a lot of good baseball people in Kansas City. He's good baseball mind. I like Pedro a lot. I wish him well.
Florida State wasn't. That was they weren't in the ACC with BC then.
No. This was pre. This is many moons ago.
But did you? You were out when the David Gordon kick, right? For Notre Dame.
I had just gotten out, and I was living with Bob Wischusen, in Miami, and that kick, the call of the kick was our outgoing message on our answer machine. That's true. Yeah.
And in case people don't know what we're talking about when Boog went to Boston College, and Boston yes. College had this enormous upset of Notre Dame at Notre Dame. The year after that, Notre Dame just whacks Boston College in a game. Probably the most noteworthy thing about that game before the upset the year before was that they filmed Rudy at halftime of that game. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then the other part about that kick was the week before, Notre Dame had beaten Charlie Ward and Florida State.
Right.
And they were probably in the driver's seat for the national title, and then BC knocked them out. So when we left, it was that was the big football win, and then the group with Isley, Huckabee, and Curley went to the Final Eight and knocked off the defending national champs, North Carolina, in the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Those were the days, man. Those were the days.
Yeah, way back.
Where the Boston papers covered them, it was crazy.
Yeah, right, right.
All right, well, morphing from the Cubs to Boston College, where you get your education to be the broadcaster that you are today, to the actually art of broadcasting. It's one of my favorite topics because I say this about all media, Boog, is everything that we knew – certainly like 10 years ago, so probably 5 years ago, probably realistically, even before the pandemic, we have to take a look and say, how has things changed? How have attention spans changed? How are things delivering change? And so before I sort of give my take or my observations, I just want to hear how you think in the last few years, if it has changed at all, how that you have to deliver things any different. Maybe you don't, but like, or how you, and obviously social media is probably part of this as well, but how do you view it now and where it's going compared to maybe 5 years ago?
I think that you're continuing to do stuff game broadcasting wise. I think this applies more to TV, where there is stuff that is more about short attention span theater and trying to cover things to keep people engaged if the game isn't in that moment interesting enough. I think that that's one of the things that you do see. Maybe, yeah, and I think, and so I think that there's also an aspect of, again, being a little like a talk show over the top of a game that can sort of sprinkle in a little bit just in case, you know, people aren't as engaged on the next play, the next play, the next play. I think that that's, and you look, you're never going to please 100% of the audience. And certainly some people just want you to sit there and just go, here's the 1-2 foul back. You know what I mean? Like, they don't want you to talk about the fact that changing the rules next year, or that they're checking for sticky stuff, or discussing something that happened in another game. You're not going to be able to please everybody. I mean, I think that in the end, you know, you come from a writing background, but ultimately what we are doing as broadcasters is we are making content decisions constantly. We are making the choice of what we are going to talk about next. We're documenting what's happening, but in terms of, you know, what path are we going to go down? What am I going to tee my partner up on? I get to choose it. And so part of, I don't think it gets talked about enough, but part of what makes most broadcasters good is a confidence in judgment in terms of, yeah, I feel like I have a handle on what is interesting for the audience.
And when I talked at the beginning of the podcast about how much I admire the way that you guys do it, I truly believe it. I have tweets to prove it, because I think I find myself, and I usually don't really tweet about broadcast because, to be honest with you, most of the time, any time you want to tweet about a broadcast, it's not going to be good. But I think you guys are the way, and I don't want to get in those crosshairs because I know how broadcasters are, you know, so for the most part. But for you guys, I've tweeted multiple times, like, man, this is good. This is really good. And the reason why I do that is because exactly what you said. I think that you guys are able to sort of bob and weave your way through the conversational tone of things, which I think, to me, is really, really important, more important than ever. and then really lean into when something important happens, leaning into the importance of it, and then breaking that down. And then maybe getting back into the conversational stuff. But I think that, and tell me if you agree or not, but I think maybe the way that some of the people, the old school way of doing it, or even some people who think they're doing the right way, kind of coming out of school, they think it's very formulaic, right? We have to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Trust yourself. I will say this, and this is, I'll just in being honest, and this is, you know, not necessarily your best idea in terms of engaging your audience. But I will say that just if I were being truthful, I don't think the audience is particularly discerning as it relates to broadcasters. I think broadcasters, by and large, they like it. We're like ice cream. You put it in your mouth and they decide, I like how it tastes, I don't like how it tastes. And that's kind of it, man. And I don't think the average person understands what the play-by-play guy's job is, understands really what the analyst's job is. I think do it this way. If you were to ask 500 sports fans and go down a list of, is this a play-by-play guy or is this an analyst? I think you get 50-50 on correct and not correct. I mean, the amount of times I've had fans ask me, so when are you going to do a game with Dan O'Brien? Never, because he does the same job as me. You know what I'm saying? Or someone comes up to me and they're like, you're a great analyst. And I'm like, thanks, not an analyst. So, I would tie it to journalism. I just don't think people understand what they get frustrated with media. I don't think people understand journalism in a lot of instances. So not to be cranky guy, but I will say, we do our thing and I don't think people completely understand what the job is in terms of documenting and why you do certain things, whether it's media or play-by-play or analysis. And I mean, my favorite example, I don't engage a ton on Twitter, but I think the best example of why social media is amazing, but also the psychology of social media, I would say 20 times a year, I get a tweet from someone telling me that I said something that was incorrect. So they're correcting me and telling me to do my homework, to do my research on a game I'm not calling. So now take that in for a second. They're doing the thing they're accusing me of doing by not doing their homework. And there's also the psychology of it makes them feel good to correct somebody, even though it's not actually me that's doing that game. That's true. Well, I threw a lot at you there. I'm sorry.
No. It's a couple things. Number one is that you're absolutely right comparing it to the writing thing. I mean, I could tweet, have a long tweet, and they're like, oh, that was a great column. What? Or like, or, you know, here or write like X team released this player. Oh, that was a great column. Well, it's not a column.
Great column. Yeah.
Great column. Right. Yeah. I mean, I really brought it home. but I think the other thing is that when they don't know if you're an analyst or, you know, a play-by-play guy or whatever it is, that should be a compliment, man. Like, that's what I'm talking about, is that, you know, I say this about with radio, with talk shows, being at the radio station that I have been for as long as I have been, I've seen it. And these places obsess over the one chair. They obsess over the one chair, right? Well, the one chair has to talk as much as the two chair. And once you get in and out of the breaks, you're talking the same. And you better be entertaining, because otherwise you're really leaning on the two chair. You know, and so, and that's why I like with you guys, it's like, yeah, you know, you're really good at calls and the intricacies of describing things, but you're also really good at just talking. And I think that's
yeah, you want to be interesting, and you got to connect on the things, and it's sort of trusting your instinct and going down paths and being willing to be playful, and maybe you're going to take the topic away from the game a tiny bit and have a little bit of fun. I also would say, one of the points I made is, especially baseball-wise, man, the job is different. I mean, whatever you want to say about the sport, but look, the amount of time between, and this year, hopefully it'll change, but the amount of time that it takes to play the game, the amount of time between pitches, and then the amount of time the ball is in play, it basically means it takes longer for less to happen. And so what that ends up meaning is that there's more time for us to fill where there's no action. So it's an invitation to say dumb stuff. So it's a challenge, but it's one that I welcome. And I love the sport so much. And I love, you know, the challenge of being asked to do it. It's just so much fun night in and night out, because I'm genuinely interested in what I'm watching and going to the ballpark and Tuesday night I'm doing Kansas at Kansas State. So it's really cool. That operates in a much smaller window, but yeah.
You like talking about this stuff? I
love it.
Do you? All right.
Because it's like, because there's also mechanical parts of it that I can dork out on that I love. I like listening to tapes for younger guys and, you know, giving them help in terms of that type of thing, especially on the radio. But I love it. I love, you know, learning, watching. I will say this. I think that there's a lot that you can do mechanically to alter yourself and get better and technically improve your timing so that your flow is good. But in the end, what you're really trying to do is take what you're like off the air and what you're like on the air, and you're really trying to make it as close as possible. I think that, like, I had growth as a broadcaster, not physical growth. Oh, I had some physical growth as well, but not like growth as a broadcaster, because I didn't anticipate it, but I think that I really took a step in my early 40s, because I got just comfortable just being my authentic self on the air. Mm. And for the most part, the way I might play with you in the press box, I would make the same type of joke with Thingy or Doug Glanville or Jim Deshaies or Rick Sutcliffe, etc.
I feel like, boo, like that's where exactly where I feel so many people go wrong. And like, I feel stupid because he's sitting here, I'm like, I'm the backup to the backup to the backup, whatever. I said a million times, I fill my head with information. I make sure I try to stop, not step over Joe or Will or whatever it is. But I do find it fascinating. And I think that exactly what you said is where people get themselves not in trouble, because they get jobs, but this, it's okay to be yourself. It's okay. Yeah. And they feel like they have to be like sort of, you know, I don't know. I mean, I didn't go to broadcasting school, so I don't know if they're telling you, like, you got to do this. But I feel like so many young broadcasters feel like they have to have the voice inflection, have to have the cookie cutter thing, instead of just being themselves.
Yes, and I think that we're probably most guilty of it in baseball, because we all have this thought in our head. And so the thing you're fighting without even realizing it is, yeah, everybody, the problem becomes when, yeah, everybody that starts, you're 24 years old and everybody's trying to sound like a 65-year-old white guy. And you're using phrases that you don't use in everyday life. So I encourage guys to speak a little bit more the way you speak, and try and it's okay to be casual. It was more formal in the 50s. The 50s were more formal. So I think you have to find your happy spot, but I think that, you know, that's how you start. You start by sort of impersonating what you've heard, and then you find your way is kind of what really ends up happening.
How has it been with sort of doing you've done team full time, right? Where you get dropped in with ESPN compared to doing the full time thing. And that must be a little bit different.
Well, so I've done it before. I just hadn't done it in a long time. I hadn't done the everyday thing. And there are a couple of things. Number one, the guy before me, Len Casper, is excellent. And he was there for 16 years, and people don't like change, you know. In baseball, the people you have locked in, they're just used to hearing the guy, and he, you know, broadcasted over the greatest stretch of Cubs baseball in the history of the franchise, saw them do something that they, you know, hadn't done since 1908. Red Sox fans can connect on that. So, you know, for me, the one part about ESPN was that I covered that Cubs team a lot, from 15 to 20. I mean, I would say I would have them 15 times a year. So I knew Hendricks, Rizzo, Arrieta, Lester, Ross, Bryant, Baez, Hayward, all the, like, I knew them all. So I knew the arc of the story pretty well. But I would also say that I didn't try and come in and be, I wasn't going to come in and try and talk about Tinkers to Evers to Chance, or talk about, or talk about deep dish pizza, or try and be Chicago expert guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those things where you just sort of try and let it happen, and not try and fake your way into, you know, I am of Chicago. I grew up in New York City, you know, but I've always appreciated coming here. So I think that I just kind of have laid back a little bit, and I've appreciated it so much. I mean, look, I think there are aspects. I still remember Gene Wojciechowski wrote something that I think is, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but I think that there are similarities between the Cubs fan base and the Red Sox fan base. I do. I think that it's, there's a fatalistic part of it, which is especially funny for the Red Sox since they won four times.
Yeah.
Since the, you know, I mean, it's a pretty good amount of success, but there is a passion that is, you know, really unrivaled, and it, most places the passion is reflective of the record. And I know that it shifted a bit in Boston because of the Patriots' success, but I mean, you're still talking about a passion for a team and a fan base. And so, you know, in Boston, it's that, you know, that entire section, it's not just Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, the northern part of Connecticut, you draw in so many places. And then the same thing with the Cubs. But what Gene Wojciechowski said is they're very similar fan bases. The Cubs fan base is, you know, the passion is wrapped in bunny rabbit's feet, and the Red Sox fan base is wrapped in razor blades.
That's pretty good.
I think there's something to it. I mean, don't kid yourself. Cubs fans are super passionate, but I love both fan bases because I love how much they love it.
Yeah, well,
love how much
I mean, love it. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, they're all subtly different, but the passion is the one thing. Like, I go to like St. Louis, I remember it was, I think it was the All-Star game, maybe. And it was like when it was actually counted, meant something. And the Cardinals were obviously a really good team, and you're playing for home field advantage. And the American League team probably pulled it out, and everyone's like, oh, just, I got the vibe of, oh no, the great game of baseball was a real winner today. I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 there's, I love how much they like it here, and I love how much they, you know, they like it there. I'm in on that. Just when there's that level of passion, it's just really special. I feel so lucky to have the job and to do, you know, one of the things I think is getting to do Friday home games. You know, it's just one of those things where, from working in the game, if you're in a big league clubhouse on Friday afternoon and the Cubs are at home, that game's on. You know what I mean? It's like it's on in every clubhouse.
Yep.
So
yep.
Just there's something about it, and I've gotten to connect with fans. I mean, Cubs Con was cool because I got to, you know, just meet so many people, and people, it's just so personal. I mean, you can relate on that. I mean,
oh, yeah, the man. Red Sox side, it's like, right? It's, and I tell you what, I went to the series when the Red Sox came to Wrigley this summer. I'll go there again. And, you know, my wife, she said she's never been to Chicago. I'm like, Chicago's so great. You got to. So we did this thing, this Hall of Fame ballot reveal with D.B. Sweeney. where he reenacted Shoeless Joe Jackson. So we like, come with me. You know, we'll go to Chicago. We would go to this cornfield in Naperville. And she held up the cue cards and it was like, oh, that was fun. But then now we're going to tour Chicago. I'm like, oh, Chicago's a little different in 5-degree weather compared to summer. So, but it's motivation, man. It's such a great town. Such a great town.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
So, all right. Well, yeah. Boog, I've been very, very generous with your time, as always. And I could talk about this stuff all day with you. And I hope to see you soon. And get some rest, man. Spring. So, what do you do for? Do you do spring training games?
I'll do spring training games. I mean, I'll do college basketball. So I do the Big 12 and, you know, Big 12 tournament, and then, you know, transition into spring training stuff. And and then, you know, still doing the Sundays on the radio, like half of them for that. And then this year I get to call the World Series nationally, which will be cool.
All right. So, all right. Yeah. All right. It's going to be a great year. Well, Boog, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You got it, Rob. My pleasure, man.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.